Want consistent color for every job? Mylow's Pro Rewards members get a 20% paint discount on future purchases after paint annual qualifying spend reaches $3,000. Plus, order eligible in-stock paint and paint supplies by 2 p.m. for free same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Improving is easy at Lowe's. Excludes spray paint and mist tints. More exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Subject to change. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Same-day delivery valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. Details at Lowe's.com/same-day-delivery.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. It's the David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Thursday, the 26th of February, year of our Lord, 2026. Well, we had an incident in Cuba. Is that going to be used to start something? We'll see what happens with it. We're going to take a look at what we know so far about it, what has been released, but we're also going to take a look at what may be happening very soon with Iran. There was a question posed to four of the largest AI chat programs asking when the war is going to start. Not if or should, but when. And it's very close. They were all pretty close together in terms of what they guessed. So we're going to take a look at that. There's also something that is brewing in terms of UFO disclosure. We've had documentaries, we've had presidents, former and current, all dropping hints with this. We've had so much activity lately. Is it a coincidence or a conspiracy? What are they getting ready to pull? We're going to take a look at that, as well as the push into psychedelics. This came up in a committee hearing where they were vetting a new nominee, talking about her mushrooms. Many people talking about DMT and how they can get in contact with the machine elves. What are they really? We'll be right back. Well, I want to begin with what happened with Cuba. There was 10 people on a Florida-based speedboat. I got to say that if you are a speedboat manufacturer, or you're, you know, if you've, if they're traded on the stock exchange, you may want to short the stock, because I think it's going to get to the point where people don't want to buy these speedboats anymore. They're going to get shot out of the water, even either by the Pentagon or by Cuba. Allegedly, there was, however, a gun battle with Cuban border troops. This is a story coming out of Cuba. Of course, none of this has been verified yet. There are allegedly some survivors. Off of this, the Cuban military did not go back and machine gun all the survivors like we do, right? I just can't get over that. It's just amazing to me. I look at this and it's like, are we the monsters that we fought, the Nazis, doing this? I mean, that was a hallmark of the U-boat commanders. They would hit a ship with a torpedo, then they would come back and execute all the survivors that were shipwrecked. We have that in our Pentagon rules, so that we don't become the Nazis, but not under Trump, not under quote-unquote Christian nationalist Pete Hegseth. No, they're fine with doing that. So evidently what was happening was when they encountered this speedboat with 10 people in it, according to the Cuban officials, these people fired on them. And the interesting thing is we have names. We don't really, they haven't been interviewed or debriefed yet. But the people who are on the boat all seem to have Cuban names. Sanchez Gonzalez, Leordan Enrique Cruz Gomez, and on. So this is coming out of Florida. And I know from growing up in Florida that people whose parents came, you know, my generation, it was their parents who came out of Cuba, and the hatred was visceral for Cuba. And I'm not saying that wasn't deserved either. I'm just saying that they have been aching to get us into a war with Cuba for the longest time. And perhaps that was what was involved with this. I'm just speculating here. We don't know. Again, Cuba said its soldiers killed 4 people, wounded 6 others in a Florida registered speedboat that had entered Cuban waters and opened fire on the soldiers first, injuring one Cuban officer. Cuba's government said the majority of the 10 people on board have a known history of criminal and violent activity. What do they mean by that? Well, some of these people, one of them in particular, was organizing, trying to organize invasion in Florida. So this is that's what they're talking about. They know these people are itching to go back to Cuba. Cuban authorities, based on their involvement in the promotion, planning, organization, financing, support, or commission of actions carried out in national territory or other countries in connection with acts of terrorism. Well, they're saying in terms of acts of terrorism, you know, threats to try to overthrow the Cuban regime. And so they identified 7 of the 10 passengers, all of them Hispanic or Cuban in terms of their names, but no interviews yet of that. Suffice to say, said Marco Rubio, a Cuban himself who's anxious to overthrow the Cuban regime, said, suffice it to say, it's highly unusual to see shootouts in the open sea like that. Yeah, typically what we do is we just kill people from a distance with missiles, right? These guys got up close and started firing, which is, by the way, nothing that was never done with any of these boats. And I don't know what the count is now. It's like 24 or something. None of those boats ever fired on the Americans. One of the men identified by the Cuban government as Conrado Galindo Sarial was interviewed in June in 2025 by a U.S.-based news site that has long called for a change of government in Cuba. So again, maybe these guys took it into their own hands. Maybe they're hoping that the U.S. government will seize upon this as some kind of a false flag and carry this out. So you see right away a Florida congressman, a Republican Carlos Jimenez, blasted the Cuban regime and says, this regime must be relegated to the dustbin of history. So he's ready to pick it up. You know, if you got 10 guys who are Cubans who want to overthrow the Cuban government, 10 individuals not even associated with the government, perhaps, if they go in and with a speedboat and start shooting it up and get shot themselves, then you're going to have a congressman like this who's saying, that's it, we have to have a war. They don't even need a reason. to have a war anymore. It's absolutely insane. The dictatorship of Cuba has just attacked a boat from Florida and murdered those on board, he said. This regime must be relegated to the dustbin of history. So again, will it provide the Trump administration with tenuous reasons to do what they wanted to do all along? We have become the regime that starts wars, that starts invasions. We don't fight justified defensive wars. We are not interested in ending wars, and we're not interested in protecting civilian casualties. So we have become the evil ones and all this stuff. The U.S. military, meanwhile, has boarded a third oil taker in the Indian Ocean that they tracked from the Caribbean. U.S. forces boarded an oil taker in the Indian Ocean that attacked the Caribbean, marking the third such incident. Yeah, Trump, the pirate of the high seas. This is a mafia regime, folks. It truly is organized crime, racketeering. And, of course, it was Smedley Butler who said that his time in the Marines, he said, war is a racket. In other words, racketeering. It's like a mafia. The government going out and killing competition for their favored businesses that are out there. This really has become a mafia regime. Literally, everybody can see it now. You don't need an insider telling you that. Since the attack on Venezuela, the U.S. has been controlling Venezuela's oil trade, imposing a ramped-up oil embargo on Cuba, causing mass fuel shortages and humanitarian crisis in an apparent attempt to have regime change in Havana. Another drug lord is killed. So are we done with the drug war? Are we winning yet? That's a question Free Thought Project has. It's actually an article from the Future of Freedom Foundation. Think about the many times, that's what this article is about. Think about the many times that you see the American government and the American press celebrating. Well, we got that drug lord. We got El Chapo. We got Pablo Escobar. And now we've got the latest guy, El Mencho. Does it ever stop anything? It's like when they look at this, we seized, millions of dollars of this particular drug. Well, that's really going to change things. No, it doesn't. It doesn't change anything. We've been doing this for 52 years. The very definition of insanity, continuing to do the same thing, thinking you're going to get some different results. So the article says, I can't help but laugh every time I read an account on mainstream press about how a big drug kingpin has just been killed or captured. Their mindset is always, finally, finally, finally we're making progress in the drug war. It is so dumb and idiotic. How can anyone really buy into this nonsense? How can these people not see this has been going on for decades? How can they not see this is just a racket? A decades-long, never-ending, ongoing, perpetual racket perpetrated by U.S. officials, primarily the CIA folks. This latest example is the guy known as El Mencho. New York Times describes him as, quote, one of the world's most powerful drug lords. They said his killing, quote, dealt a major blow to the Jalisco New Generation Cartel. Wow, major blow, imagine that, he says. Instead, it's just another reason why it'll go on and on and on. In fact, the killing has just unleashed a massive campaign of retaliatory violence in Puerto Vallarta and Guadalajara. To the New York Times' credit, the article does point out the following truth. Since the United States began its war on drugs nearly six decades ago, multiple drug lords have been arrested or killed and cartels have been dismantled. Yet, more people around the world are using drugs than ever. An estimated 25 million people used cocaine worldwide in 2023, up from 17 million a decade earlier, according to a UN report released last year. And I got to say, that's quantitative information. If you look at it qualitatively, it has created so many much, much, much more dangerous forms of drugs. Far more addictive, far more likely to kill you with an overdose. This is the pattern that we have seen over and over again with prohibition. We saw it in the brief prohibition of alcohol prohibition, that it results, not only does it corrupt the government, law enforcement, the courts, it also creates more intense forms of whatever it is that you're trying to prohibit. And so I said, take a look at the photograph that accompanies this article. It's a photograph of the body of the drug kingpin named Pablo Escobar. He was the El Mencho of his day back in the 1980s and 90s. Notice the happy looks on the Colombian drug warriors who were responsible for killing him. They were as happy as today's drug warriors are about killing El Mencho. As almost everybody knows, the drug war has been a major factor in the destruction of civil liberties and privacy, including financial privacy here in the United States. It has been one of the best MacGuffins they could ever come up with. At the same time, the drug war and the violence that came with it ended up destroying Mexico. As we've been saying at the Future of Freedom Foundation for 36 years, there is one and only one way to get rid of drug lords and the black market violence that comes with them. That way is drug legalization. What stopped Al Capone and people like him? Well, yes, it was the income tax violations that they had there, but we don't see alcohol distributors shooting each other up on the streets anymore. Right? There are other ways to control this stuff. And so from that standpoint, they're absolutely right. With drug legalization, the drug lords and the drug war violence disappear immediately. However, there's still the issue of individual drug abuse, individual addiction. You can stop the cartels by stopping their black market monopoly that's been handed to them. But how do you stop the addiction? Well, that's the answer to that is not the drug war or the DEA or any of the government programs either. The answer to that is Christ. I've had multiple people on this program talking about how they were caught up in this. They were caught up in crime. They were caught up in addiction. Matt Trujillo has got a great testimony about that. And the thing that stopped it for them was the spiritual side of it. You're not going to get out of this without that. And when you look at this as a symptom of where our godless society has gone, you know, we got two separate problems here. One of them is individual addiction. The other one is the government's addiction to power. I don't know how we solve the government's addiction to power. I wish I did. I do know how we solve the individual addiction issue. And you need to ask yourself, why is it that before, what was it, 1971, I think, when they did the war on drugs? Why is it that before 1971 we didn't have these problems? It's just like the school shootings. Why did we not have massive school shootings? Many of us have pointed out that when we were going to school, you had people bringing guns to school because they were doing target practice as part of the gun club or part of whatever they're involved in, ROTC or whatever. It was common when I was a child to see people driving around with gun racks in their pickup trucks. Why is it that we didn't have these mass shootings then? And I say that it's the same thing that's causing this scourge of drugs. It's the purge of Christ out of our society. That's reality, folks. That's the solution. Meanwhile, Mike Johnson, as I pointed out yesterday, how despicable it was that the Republican Party is embracing every form of perversion while they pretend to be exactly the opposite. And of course, this particular one is about Representative Tony Gonzalez out of Texas, with primaries coming up. There's been revelations of sexting and harassment of a staffer that he had, and she wound up committing suicide, setting herself on fire. And her husband investigated and found the texts and has made them public. And so the question was, you know, should he resign? Should he step down? Does the GOP want to distance itself from a guy like this? Oh, no. No, no, no. We got to keep our majority. We got to keep our political power. We don't want to jeopardize that because of any morality or whatever. And again, this is Mike Johnson, the guy who kicked off his speakership leading a prayer and talking about God. He doesn't care about, that's all he cares about is this. And I said yesterday, I gave you the back and forth with Jim Jordan, a member of the press, you know, are you going to remove your endorsement from this guy? Well, you know, there's another guy that's running and be fine if he went. Well, are you going to endorse that guy and remove your endorsement from this guy? Well, you know, he wants to continue to sit on the fence. He won't condemn the guy. That's for the voters to decide. I don't have any say about that. Yes, you do. If you're not going to speak up about moral issues, get out of government. You're not a leader. You're just a follower. You're a sycophant. You're somebody who's trying to line your pockets. And I'm disgusted with people like Mike Johnson and Jordan. They're disgusting. They have no backbone, no spine, no principles. Well, Mike Johnson changed his tune. What do you think made him change his tune? I've got an idea why I think he changed his tune. While Trump was droning on and on in his boring State of the Union, telling lie after lie, patting himself on the back, breaking his arm, patting himself on the back, while all that was happening, there were three elections that all went Democrat, some of them in Republican areas as well. And they are plummeting in terms of popularity, according to polls. So maybe that's what brought him around, because evidently, he doesn't have any moral compass that's going to change his direction. It's only political polls that point to what's coming. On Monday, Tony Gonzalez, the congressman from Texas, faced calls to resign after it was revealed that he was involved in a sex scandal with one of his aides, who later took her own life through self-immolation, setting herself on fire. Those calls continued throughout the week and may have prompted Johnson to push back. I think it's the polls, not the calls. And because these guys are such weasels, they don't have the backbone, the spine to stand up to something like this and condemn it. What's the matter with them?
Yeah, call me crazy, but I think perhaps if your attention and presence causes someone to immolate, you know, self-immolate, maybe we remove you from government. Maybe that's a brave and bold stance to take today, but I'm willing to take it.
Yeah.
You know, Congress, you can rally behind me. My torch lights the way, so you can all follow along, and we'll get Tony Gonzalez out of there.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, they can't bring themselves to condemn this guy, to distance themselves from this guy. Finally, after days of this, because there's been several women, and you had Thomas Massie, and to his credit, Tim Burchett joined with this. But for the most part, the Republicans are going to just, no, we need to have a Republican majority. You want to talk about partisanship? You want to talk about being part of the club and all of this sickness of how people establish their identity as being, you know, part of a club. These guys are the worst example of this because they want to have the majority because they're going to control the process. You know, when you've got the majority now, the rules that were put in by Nancy Pelosi and propagated by these subsequent GOP speakers are the speaker is going to control everything. I mean, the people, you want to talk about how important it is to vote? Listen to the congressmen who tell you that they're trying to fight to even get their bills to be on the floor. They can't even vote on their own bills. And you think you're going to change something at the ballot box? It's crazy. Anyway, Johnson said, while I said to him publicly and privately, he's got to address that directly and head on with his constituents. There is a primary there in less than a week. These things will play out, so we're allowed to let that happen. That's as far as he's going. He hasn't really changed his tune. He's still saying, well, it's up to the voters. I'm just neutral on this stuff.
Now, personally, I would never cause a woman to light herself on fire, but that's really between him and the voters. If the voters don't have a problem with it, who am I to say?
Yeah, that's right. Well, the other thing that the texts revealed were that she was trying to push him back. I mean, it really was. He was pushing hard against her. She was pushing back. Well, have you had a lot to drink? Go to bed and all this other kind of stuff. So evidently he was persistent and he was able to do what caused her to commit suicide. Meanwhile, we have Ken Paxton in Texas, the attorney general that is there, and he is running against John Cornyn. Now, John Cornyn is kind of a typical establishment Republican. He's a gun control Republican. That's been part of his weakness. And, of course, he was sitting right there with Trump. Trump had, like, John Cornyn on one side and Dianne Feinstein on the other side. He said, you know, fortunately, I can do gun control myself. I don't even need Congress. And we can make all this stuff happen. The two of them are like, yeah. So John Cornyn's got some issues. That's just one of his issues as a Republican in terms of what the Republican voters think are important. Ken Paxton has checked all the boxes pretty much that MAGA wants to see in terms of policy. However, he's got quite a history himself. His wife is a Texas state senator, and she stuck by him in some of his infidelities that were there. But he was brought up on some charges, and she voted to impeach him, I believe. I'd have to go back and look at it, but now they're getting divorced, as they say, for biblical reasons. And an ad from John Cornyn has gone for the jugular, to put it politely. So the crooked Ken Paxton cheated on his wife. The new ad goes there in an effort to stop fraud from sinking the Texas GOP, they say. Well, I got to say, this is one of the things that I've always said about Donald Trump. I said it when I was at InfoWars, I said, if he's unfaithful to his wife and wives, he is going to be unfaithful to his oath to the Constitution. I mean, you know, if you got somebody that's really close to you and you betray them, how easy it is to betray a document, a piece of paper, right? And we've seen that over and over again from Trump. Well, this ad, the narrator kicks things off by declaring, it's voting time, so let's cut through the BS. No, they don't say BS. They say we didn't play it because they want to establish their street creds as being tough. So it's profanity laden. Anyway, crooked Ken Paxton cheated on his wife. She's divorcing him on biblical grounds. So now Paxton's wrecking another home, sleeping around with a married woman of mother of seven. And remember, this crooked Ken has increased his net worth by as much as 7,000% since taking office. And his actions in office, even more troubling. He gave millions of Texas tax dollars to left-wing organizations, including the Montrose Center that hosts drag queen shows and performs gender-affirming services to kids as young as seven. Well, I don't know if these accusations are true. I don't know how. I can imagine that he's increased his net worth by 7,000%. That's, I guess, not that uncommon, unfortunately, for our politicians. That's why they get into this. But in terms of giving millions of Texas tax dollars to this Montrose Center that's doing LGBT trainee stuff, I don't know how the Attorney General has got control over money that's being given to people. Maybe that's true. I don't know. Anyway,
these people assume so many powers that aren't a part of their job that who knows.
That's true. Maybe it's funding from his department. Now think of the Paxton dirty deeds that we don't know about yet. This wife cheater and fraud, or the Texas workhorse, Senator John Cornyn, who will work to take away your guns, who is endorsed by Border Patrol and who voted with Trump 99% of the time. Cornyn got the money to finish the dam wall, and they're not talking about water either. He's a Texans know what to do, they said. So this is the new ad that they're running against Ken Paxton. And on the other side, going up, is this bomb thrower Crockett, Jasmine Crockett. And the guy that that everybody, Tyler Rico, this is the one that Stephen Colbert got into a fight with CBS over because he wanted to bring him on the program. And CBS now is going to be partisan Republican after the Ellisons have gotten it. And so they didn't want to air this interview with this Texas Democrat candidate, Tyler Rico. Stephen Colbert, many of the Democrats think he's their great white hope because this guy has gone to seminary. But, you know, the damage done by some of these seminary degrees is pretty evident in somebody like Tyler Rico. He's he checks all of the boxes of the left in terms of the decay and the moral decadence that the left is all about. But the people like Stephen Colbert think that because this guy is a graduate of a seminary, they can distance themselves from those policies that he actually supports. And the funny thing is that they just had their people are already voting, and the polls show that he's significantly behind Jasmine Crockett. And so whoever wins that is going to go up against whoever wins Cornyn and Ken Paxton. So the Democrats wanted Tyler Rico because he presents a more moderate image. Republicans want Cornyn because he presents a more moderate image. It'll be interesting to see what happens, but that Senate seat is in play. Many conservatives like Karl Rove have warned Republicans risk losing Cornyn's seat if Paxton wins the primary race. Well, conservative economist has scored really big. Sometimes if you've got the information, sometimes you can do something with it, right? He bet that Doge would fail on one of these markets like Polymarket or something like that. The interesting thing is, Wall Street Journal had the story. They portrayed it as he bet his life savings on the failure of Doge. And by failure, what he means is that they were going to be spending more money after Doge than they did before Doge, that it wasn't going to have an effect on the federal government's spending. He's pretty confident of that. He works for the Tax Foundation, and he didn't put his entire life savings in. There was kind of a caveat about that. It did not include his retirement plan. It did not include the equity in his house, but all of his, he took all of his cash assets and put it on red number 7. And, he won big time on this. It actually was more informed than if he had gone to a roulette wheel. Contrary to his promise to save $1 trillion, federal government spending, and that promise was from Elon Musk, federal government spending has actually gone up. Alan Cole, senior economist at the Tax Foundation, took the bet and told a Wall Street Journal reporter Robert Rubin how and why he dropped $342,195 into a prediction market wager on the Kalshi platform. And so he said he looked at the terms of the wager and he saw an opportunity because he didn't believe anything that Musk would do would significantly curtail spending on interest or the national debt or entitlements like Social Security and Medicare, especially as America's population continues to age. Well, the information finally came out, and it wasn't even close. It was a slam dunk win for this guy. The bet on Kalshi's site was simply that federal spending would go up, as it long has. And Cole interpreted the risk as lower than a standard sports bet or other prediction market bets that can be gamed by people who have insider knowledge. He did diversify his risk somewhat. He said he put some on bets on that unless spending declined by more than $50 million or so. He wound up making a 37% profit, though, is the only profit that he made off of that. I guess the odds were not really that high. I think probably most people realized, as you and I did, that Doge wasn't going to deliver as promised. So by winning this, he only won 37% or $128,000. I don't know. I don't think I would take that bet. I don't think I would risk all of my liquid assets for a potential return of under 40%.
Cole, I guess, still has one to of those pay. Things where everyone realizes the lifeblood of the government is corruption.
Yeah.
And so there's no way you're actually going to stop it. You have to cut out the entire thing.
That's right. That's right. He still has to pay capital gain taxes on the funds that he withdrew as well as taxes on his winnings. So it's not even a 37% increase on that. His wife read comments on the website from people on the other side of the bet. And she got very confident because she said they didn't seem to understand what they were buying. I would say this about Trump followers all the time. They don't seem to understand at all what they're buying. Well, in terms of buying, if you look at what is happening in California, the insurance situation that is there has absolutely gotten untenable. As a matter of fact, nobody can sell their homes now, pretty much. I mean, I'm not saying nobody, but it's becoming unbelievable when you look at what is happening there. One out of every five California home sales were canceled because the home insurance is going to be unobtainable or unaffordable. So they get there ready to do the closing, and then they find out what the insurance bill is going to be, and it's like, I can't cover that. And so this particular couple that they start the story with had paid about $500 a month to insure their home when they bought it in 2012. Last month, they got their new bill, $44,000 a year. So it went from $6,000 a year in 2012 to $44,000 a year. I mean, that's nearly $4,000 a month that it's gone to. And so they said there was only one other insurer that was willing to issue insurance, and they wanted $80,000 a year. Imagine that. And so that was Lloyd's of London. I mean, we're getting into speculative stuff here. I mean, you have to get insurance on that Kalshi market that's there. Maybe that's what should happen. Maybe people should forget about Polymarket and stuff like that. They really want to risk your money, start underwriting the houses in California, because the government there is not doing anything to mitigate the fires. They're not doing anything to clear up brush that is there, underbrush and fire prevention. And they are woefully inadequate in terms of the things that they're doing in terms of fighting the fires. And so this is the consequence of a do-nothing, corrupt government like they have in California with Gavin Newsom. Their response to, rather than doing anything to prevent fires, rather than doing anything to fight fires, their response was simply to put caps on the insurance companies. And that has blown up now. They had to give them emergency extensions and emergency increases in order to even keep them solvent. But even in spite of that, most of the insurance companies have left. They don't want to have anything to do with that market that's there. So this has been going on and building up for years. And the Democrats in California are literally burning down the homes there, burning down home ownership. It's a lesson for us all to see that happen. And again, so many of the problems are of state origin. And the solution is a state solution. There's not anything that's going to be done by the federal government to make this better. I mean, if the federal government came in with its unlimited credit card and started underwriting these situations, it's just going to get bigger and bigger as they're not doing anything for prevention or for firefighting. Well, with all that news, I thought this was a very good article, and I was surprised to see it coming from Caitlin Johnstone. This is the kind of article I would typically see from a Christian. It says it's very possible to be both happy and well-informed. So many people say when I give people the intelligence, which is what she does as well. She's constantly talking about the American Empire and wars and corruption and things like negative things like that, which we need to know about. And her response is, well, you know, just take a Pollyanna view of the world. That's not really wise. That's not really an option. You can take an honest look at what is happening and be well informed about it and speak in favor of changing it and not wind up as a black-pilled, suicidal person. And I thought it was very interesting. She had some things to say, even though she's not a Christian. She said there's a viral tweet going around that says that it's, quote, hard to find the balance between educating yourself on current events and not making yourself so indescribably sad that you can't properly function. She said it's a relatable statement, but it's based on an incorrect understanding. The key isn't finding a balance between blissful ignorance and painful awareness. It's learning to find happiness in sources that don't depend on this delusional belief that everything is fine. It's very possible to be both happy and well-informed. We live in an explosively beautiful universe. That's right. And the Christian knows this is my Father's world. And though the wrong be off so strong, God is the ruler yet, right? That's what we look at. And so I was kind of interested to see, since I know she's not a Christian, you know, what she gets her confidence in. And she focuses on the beauty of nature, even though, as a Christian knows, this world has been cursed multiple times by God, and we know that there is a much, much better world that's coming. But she looks at the beauty that still remains, which is amazing when you think about it, that there's still some beauty in that. And she also looks at, even though we have evil people in high places, she said, focus on your relationships with people, your family, your friends, that type of thing. And let this information flow through you, react with it, and then let it go. And that's a key thing, I think. That's how she deals with it. And I think that's basically the way Christians look at this. It was good to see that she had that. Of course, she needs to, still needs God. God is the one who is the ultimate ruler. And there are things that are coming. No one knows, can even imagine. If she thinks this world is beautiful, you can't even imagine what is coming. It's true that we live in a civilization of unfathomable cruelty. That's right. Many people blame that on God. But it is humans that is doing that. And, of course, the forces behind them as well. Horrific abuses in a society which elevates the worst art, the worst values, and the worst people to the highest levels of prominence. It's also true that getting to live even a single moment on this astonishing blue planet is a gift worthy of immense joy and gratitude. These things are both fully true at the same time. They do not negate each other. Don't find your happiness in the belief that everything is okay, because everything is not okay. If you spend your life squirming around trying to avert your gaze from the truth and psychologically compartmentalizing away from reality, you will never know actual happiness. Instead, find your happiness in that which cannot be corrupted by this fraudulent dystopia. Very close to the Christian understanding. Again, our treasure is in heaven, where the president can't steal it, and it can't be destroyed, and it doesn't decay. Your connections with your loved ones, that's real. That's authentic. The radiance of the natural world, that's real. That is authentic. That's right. And again, she talks about, you know, when you have gratitude, right? And gratitude to whom? Well, to God. You know, what do we have Thanksgiving for? We have it as Thanksgiving to God for what he has provided. You can open your heart to all the suffering and to all the wonder at the same time. And you can fall on your knees in both anguish and gratitude. I would add, to God. That is the bottom line. We're going to take a quick break, folks, and we will be right back. Stay with us.
You're listening to The David Knight Show.
If you like the Eagles,
on a dark desert highway,
the Cars, and Huey Lewis in the News,
they say the hotter rock and roll is competing.
You'll love the Classic Hits channel at APS Radio. Download our app or listen now at APSradio.com.
Well, as I said earlier in the show, as the Republicans are cheering Donald Trump and he's telling one lie after the other, whether it's about tariffs or income taxes or inflation or war and peace, just one lie after the other. Everybody had heard it. It's all recycled and as boring and as long as it could be. While all that was happening, the Republicans were losing three elections that night. And then when you look at what happened afterwards, as Trump is walking down the aisle, they have a Republican congressman who's now being roasted on the internet for begging Trump to sign his tie after the State of the Union. Yeah, they're going to wish at some point that they weren't tied to him, I got to say. Of course, this guy is retiring, but his twin brother is running for his seat in Congress, and Trump has endorsed his twin brother. Practically the entire caucus participated in the rah-rah jeering and chanting, writes the New Republic. But the fanboying was especially true for Texas Representative Troy Nels, who sounded securely the most cringeworthy moment of the night by begging the president to sign his Trump-themed tie. Yeah, this is where we are. These people are, this guy is the anti-Massey, you know. Massey's going to stand there with a smaller government, smaller spending, and whatever like that. This guy is like, whatever Trump wants. You know, and this is the kind of fanboy nonsense that's going to cost the GOP everything, really. As Trump exited the lower chamber, he caught a glimpse of Nels dutifully waiting in line to greet him. But more importantly, he saw the tie, an American flag printed with several repeated images of Trump's face. I wonder how much that set him back. I mean, if Trump is going to have his fight watch for $100,000, I wonder what tie with his face all over it has. Ooh, look at this guy. I like that tie. I want that tie, Trump said. Give me that tie. And he said, well, thank you. Initial, can you just initial? And he pulls it out and he gets a pen and gives him something to write on. Please, just initial one of them. This guy is 57 years old, by the way. And he gives the pen to the president. And this is basically what the State of the Union speech looked like. A bunch of clowns. It's like a carload of clowns all cheering the chief clown, the clown in chief. Anyway, people commenting on social media said, even the diehards in North Korea don't grovel and beg for an autograph. Well, he may be a tie-hard, I guess. He's a tie-hard supporter. Definitely not a cult, said another one. One of them compared him to Oliver Twist. Please, sir, can I have some more? A 57-year-old asking for an autograph of his favorite sexual predator. Nels is not seeking re-election at the end of the term, as I said. It's his twin brother is going to be there, but Republicans stare down an epic voter enthusiasm gap ahead of the midterms this year. And again, they may be not quite so enthusiastic about Trump as these sycophants in Congress. This is the Washington Post saying Democrats hold a wide advantage in voter enthusiasm over Republicans that could help them reclaim at least some power. According to Washington Post ABC News poll, they said more Democrats than Republicans said that they are certain to vote this year, 79% to 65%. That 14-point advantage is the largest that Democrats have reported on this question ahead of a midterm election since at least 2006. And by comparison, in 2018, when the Democrats won back the House in a big wave, that was the midterm for Trump's first term, that spread of enthusiasm was 5 points. Now it is three times that. And, of course, you know, we go back and look at 2006. That was just before we got Obama coming in, right? And so Trump is basically going to bring in another Obama. That's what I see happening here. He's basically transferring this stuff over to the Democrats. It is a left-right collusion, I believe. When you look at, from Trump to Biden, Biden to Trump and that type of thing, because they're following so many of the same policies. The real core things in terms of establishing the police state and surveillance state and all the things that were done with the vaccine and the vaccine mandates, it is a tag team situation where they hand it off from one to the other and they pick an avatar, which we call a president. They pick the guy that is going to disarm the people that would normally react to this if it was the other side that was doing it. That's been the role of Trump, and now he's there to pass this off to the Democrats. And I think it's going to be a big handoff, by the way. CNN, looking at what's going on in Texas, said CNN's Enten said, "This blows my mind. Harry Enten is their data guy looking at the elections." And he said, "My mind is blown at this point. The share of midterm primary ballots from Democrats in Texas is 53%. Republicans are at 47%, a major difference from 2022 when 38% were from Democrats and 62% were from Republicans. That's another measure of enthusiasm. Trump is turning out the Democrats in Texas. Is he going to turn Texas Democrat? That's the amazing thing that we're looking at here. He said, this could break what was a 20-year stretch of Republican dominance in Texas. Still a close race for Senate, but given that the Republicans have been so outvoting Democrats in Texas, the idea that most people could actually vote on the Democrat side in Texas, again, as I said at the top, whoa. And it's all thanks to one man, really. Trump's approval rating with independents has hit a new low. And that was the head of the State of the Union. He didn't do anything that's going to bring it back either. It was Zero Hedge was hoping that he was going to make some specific policy statements or something like that. There was nothing like that at all. It was just a bunch of rehashed lies that he's told many times before. Only 32% of Americans say that Trump has had the right priorities. 68% say that he hasn't paid enough attention to the country's most important problem. And I imagine most of them say it's the economy. Usually is the economy. When Trump addressed Congress last year for the first time since returning to the White House, his approval rating stood at a career high of 48%. Trump's approval rating now has dropped 15 points over the past year to 26%, the lowest it's been in either of his terms. So he's gone from the highest point that he ever had now to the lowest point in terms of approval. And this is showing up in the independents. And again, as I mentioned before, James Tallarico is losing by double digits even to Jasmine Crockett. And so both sides are being very polarized. She is a radical, if ever there was one. Not that I support Tallarico either. The problem is I know who these Democrats are. They've got their own set of problems that are really, really bad. So evidently what we're looking at here is the Democrat Party in Texas. Race matters more than religion because Democrats really don't care about religion. I don't know why they thought they looked at it and they thought, well, this is going to be really good in the general election. The problem is that the base is not interested in that. And you can't win the primary to somebody that is polarized. And this is one of the aspects that's dragging us down on both sides. We get the most polarizing people out there. But anyway, that's one aspect of this. And I want to take a look at the tariff issues because that was something that a lot of people, the economy is very big. And a lot of people realize that they are paying the taxes. And it's not foreign companies that are paying this. Trump's tariffs are not going to eliminate the income tax. As a matter of fact, he lied to people and told them that they would.
As time goes by, I believe the tariffs.
This is from Breitbart.
By foreign countries will, like in the past, substantially replace the modern day system of income tax, taking a great financial burden off the people that I love.
Breitbart sells his lies like nobody else. Look at that. Trump tariffs will replace the income tax. All big letters at the bottom and they're flashing it red. Nothing could be further from the truth. I am so disgusted with Breitbart. I don't even go there anymore. I just happened to see that clip there that was on X. So the tariffs, as Reason says, Eric Boehm says, Trump's tariffs are not going to eliminate the income tax, especially true if the tariffs are illegal. Don't bother to tell that to Breitbart. I mean, they've got a story to tell their base. You know, they're going to be cheerleaders. They're as pathetic as those clowns in Congress. They're as pathetic as that sycophant who wants his tie, a 57-year-old congressman who wants Trump to sign his tie. That's crazy. So anyway, that is a lie that Trump is telling people. And it's critical thinking will tell you that's not the case. As I pointed out from the very beginning, all these people saying Trump's going to replace income tax with this other stuff. Well, you better do it first. Because if he doesn't replace the income tax with this new tax, you'll wind up with both. People have known that and people have said that. We've had so many different proposals to change the form of taxation from income tax to a national sales tax or a flat tax or a fair tax. Remember Herman Cain and his 999. Everybody's got a plan that they think is a better way to do it than income tax. And I would agree with that. But the problem has always been people said if you don't get rid of the income tax first, then you'll wind up with both of them. And Trump even said we're going to make the income tax cuts permanent. Why do you make the income tax cuts permanent if the income tax itself is not permanent? He's telling you if you stop and think about it. So what Reason says is the president's been making versions of this claim since his 2024 campaign. Like its similar claim that the tariffs will allow the federal government to pay off the national debt, a promise so outlandish that Trump seems to have abandoned that one, though some of his fans keep repeating it. You know, people like Breitbart, for example, even though the math doesn't work. Individual income tax collections have totaled $924 billion over the first 4 months of the fiscal year, while tariffs have brought in about $118 billion, even after Trump hiked tariffs to levels not seen in decades. So, you know, we're looking at something that is about one-ninth of, you know, the tariff revenue is about one-ninth of what the income tax revenue is. So how are you going to replace that, right? As the Tax Foundation noted last year, and by the way, this is the Tax Foundation is where this guy works that placed the bet against Doge. I think they've got this figured out at the Tax Foundation. Anyway, it's a gap in the size of the tax base. In recent years, the U.S. has imported around $3 trillion worth of goods annually. If you're going to achieve anything like the level of money that they get from the income tax of annual revenue from tariffs, you would need to have astronomically high tariffs. For example, right? Think about it. If you got, if we're importing $3 trillion worth of stuff, and of course, this all mitigates against the idea Trump wants the tariffs to stop the imports. If you stop the imports, you dry up your revenue right there. But let's say that his tariffs don't stop the imports. Let's say that everybody reshores their manufacturing and they've got now robots making the stuff rather than people in China who are wage slaves. Well, then it all goes away. But if you still have $3 trillion coming in terms of $3 trillion that you're spending, and he puts a 15% tax on all of that, right, which is what he just did. Well, how much is that going to be? That's only going to be about $450 billion. And that is half of what the income tax has brought in just the first 4 months. There's absolutely no way that you're going to be able to replace the income tax with a tariff. And that's what they point out in this article. The only solution, folks, is not to keep raising taxes, not to come up with new and ingenious forms of taxes, not to come up with a tax that people don't know how much they're paying and think that they're not paying it, that kind of deception. The reality is that you've got to shrink the size of government so that it can fit in the Constitution. You've heard me say that over and over again. We need a government that is small enough to fit in the Constitution. If the government was small enough to fit in the Constitution, it'd be very easy to fund it in a number of ways. It could be tariffs, it could be income taxes, and none of them would be onerous. The problem is the size of government. And, of course, Trump isn't going to do anything at all about that. And, by the way, reason says the same thing. The alternative would be to dramatically reduce the size and the cost of the federal government. You'd have to get it to fit in the Constitution. And this this thing will not fit. It's like the pants that we had back when we were in high school. You know, there's no way we're ever going to get back in those things again. I don't think that's going to happen with the federal government either. Will the Trump administration pay the tariff refunds that it promised to pay? It said that it lost in court, it would refund the companies that paid unlawful tariffs. But now it says this could take years. This is another example of the Trump regime's dishonesty and how they lie up one side and down the other. And how, like I said before, they're not interested in making government smaller. Trump wanted all that money to play with, right? He's no different than Bernie Sanders. You're trying to loot the Treasury, right? Which is what Bernie Sanders said about tax cuts. They've signaled an unwillingness to refund hundreds of billions of dollars of illegally collected taxes. This is from Reason as well. Despite the fact the Trump administration told the courts and the media last year that it'd be willing and able to issue refunds if the tariffs are blocked, again, you know, they said, just let us continue to collect the tariffs while we litigate this in court and we wait for the Supreme Court to make the decision. And we'll refund everything. Don't worry. If we lose, we'll refund everything. Just let us continue to collect this stuff. What a dishonest group of lying crooks the Trump regime is. It's amazing. Thousands of companies, including some big names like FedEx and Costco, have already filed lawsuits seeking refunds of their tariff bills. At stake is about $175 billion in revenue collected via the tariffs that the Supreme Court ruled unlawful last week. But during a press conference shortly after the Supreme Court ruling, Trump, the sore loser, indicated he expects a drawn-out legal battle over those payments, saying the issue might get litigated for the next 2 years, he said. Trump blamed the Supreme Court for not directly addressing the question of its refunds in its rulings. He said, wouldn't you think they would have put a sentence in there saying, keep the money or don't keep the money? Almost like it's not written by smart people, he said. And what do? They don't even talk about that. Well, maybe they didn't realize what a crook they're dealing with. If there's some problem with that, then it's the idea that they overestimated his character. May 2025, attorneys from the Trump administration argued against the need for an injunction to block the ongoing collection of tariffs. They said the plaintiffs could easily be made whole after the fact. But now they're not doing that. And this is what they had to say, quote, we can fully remedy any harms by obtaining a refund of any tariffs ultimately held invalid, said Trump's attorneys at the time. And they repeated that promise again in January when attorneys for Customs and Border Protection said that the government did not intend to challenge the court's authority to order reliquidation. Bessent also acknowledged in interviews that tariff refunds would have to be issued if the court ultimately ruled against the Trump administration. He said, if the court says it, we'll have to do it. But of course, what they transformed into, first they said, yeah, just let us continue to collect this and we'll give it back to them right away. No big deal. Then they started to assume the line. I talked about this. I said, they're saying that this is going to be a catastrophic mess. And so they made that an argument for why the Supreme Court should ignore the law. And it's not a question as to whether or not this thing is going to be a mess to unwind. That's not a legal question. And they were right to ignore it. But the Trump administration was trying to use that as a pragmatic lever to make sure that the court ruled in their favor. Bessent told Fox News on this Friday, this could be a mess. This could take months. This could take years to litigate and to get the payments out. As Reason says, this is all very disingenuous. The Supreme Court did not need to delve into the refund question because there was no dispute over that Both sides of the tariff lawsuit had agreed in lower courts that refunds would be paid. And it's the Trump administration who lied and is going back on it. The government cannot promise the courts that refunds will be automatic if the unlawful tariffs are struck down at the Supreme Court, and then after the decision, say that those refunds might take years. This is simple. The government unlawfully imposed a tax on Americans and took their money, and we would like it back. That's the person who's the chairman of the Liberty Justice Center, one of the legal nonprofits representing small businesses that were hurt with these unlawful tariffs. The federal government should not be allowed to keep $175 billion that it illegally collected from American businesses just because it would be complicated to refund the money. It certainly shouldn't be able to get away with that scam after telling the courts and the public that the refunds would be readily available. But folks, we're talking about the Trump regime here. By the way, when you look at this, I said before, I'm not going to call him president because he doesn't fit the bill. He has violated his oath of office to such an extent that he has absolutely no authority as president. He does have power, but he has no authority. I'm not going to give him that title. I'm not going to call it administration or administration officials. This is a regime, and it's not government. It's organized crime. It's not government. It's racketeering. That's all the Trump regime truly is. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to look at the Iranian issue and what is the timing according to some of the artificial intelligence chatbots and what reasons did they give. And we all know it's getting very, very close. No question about it. And it's no question about if it's going to happen. The question is really more about when. And so we're going to address that when we come back. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Now, the David Knight Show. Well, I mentioned in the last segment the guy from the Tax Foundation who looked at the claims from Elon Musk. We're going to reduce the budget by $1 trillion and all the rest of the stuff. I don't think so. And so he bet his life savings against that, and he won. But he only won 37% in terms of what he put down on it. And I got to say, when you look at what the government is doing, there's other ways that you can bet against it. And that's really what gold and silver are about. Those are basically ways for you to bet against the policies, the horrible policies that this government is doing, bad economic policies, wars, all the rest of this stuff. Gold is a safe haven. Now, you're not putting it at risk like you're going to place a bet on Polymarket or that other one, Kalshi, which is what he put it on. This is something that has retained its value over centuries, millennia, as a matter of fact. And when you look at the return on investment, I mean, 37%, that is very small compared to what gold and especially silver did over the last year. And so what is happening now with gold? Gold is kind of consolidated now around 5,000. And when we talk about consolidation, what that really is kind of a getting a general feel of the market, that people are kind of comfortable with it at that level. Because they have to get used to that. You know, when gold has been around, 1,500, 2,000 level for a long time, and all of a sudden it shoots up very fast to 5,000, people start to get kind of scared about it. Some people want to take their profits, but people are starting to get comfortable with it at 5,000 now, apparently, in the marketplace. And so now you've got UBS and a lot of other banks and analysts that are looking at it. What are their predictions? Well, they see it happening going up to 6,200. By mid-year. That's UBS's prediction off of all that. And again, you don't have to go to Polymarket to place bets on this stuff. You can get something that's going to hold its value. It's going to retain its value. And you can gradually start to accumulate it. You don't have to do it all at once. You can go to davidknight.gold. I'll take you to Tony Hardeman, who, by the way, is not going to be with us today. He's on the road today, working hard at these multiple locations that he's got there. But a weaker U.S. dollar and a lower U.S. real interest rates are supportive of gold, and we believe that this macro environment remains intact as the Federal Reserve has more to go on its easing cycle. And again, they're saying lower interest rates. The interest rates and what the Federal Reserve is doing, usually it works the other way, and the issue is going to be, will Trump be able to get his way with this new Federal Reserve chair? And I think that he will. I mean, history has shown that these Fed chairs basically do whatever he wants. I think that's baked in, that he's going to get what he wants. And when they lower interest rates or do other things like that, it's going to be inflationary. And that's going to drive people to gold especially. So Wood Mackenzie estimates that 80 mines will exhaust their current production plans by 2028. People are looking at how do they get more physical gold, and there's going to be something of a crunch perhaps for that as the demand continues to increase. So the $6,200 per ounce price coming from the UBS analyst, Schneider, is a forecast that represents a major upgrade from where he saw gold just a month ago. On January the 5th, he wrote that central bank buying, growing fiscal deficits, and lower U.S. interest rates and ongoing geopolitical risk would propel gold prices to $5,000 by the end of the first quarter. And, of course, it's already there, got there quite a bit early. We had a lot of people back in the fall. A lot of these banks were saying $5,000 by the first quarter. It was there nearly by the end of the year, as Gerald Slinty thought it would be the end of the year, but he missed it by just a couple of days. But now he has revised that up to $6,200 by the middle of the year. So, again, gold and silver will have to wait in order to benefit from lower rates, but I think those things are coming. And if you look at what may happen in terms of war, it's a complicated situation because if you have the Iran war and oil flow is restricted, it's going to have some major economic consequences for all the economies, and that would be very deflationary. So it'll kind of be a mixed bag. I'm not really sure what's going to happen with that. I just know that gold is probably the safest haven that you can have. Nothing is 100% safe, but it is probably the safest thing. Having it physically is the key. And again, if you go to davidknight.gold, you can use Tony Arterman's Wise Wolf Gold. That is a way for you to be able to gradually accumulate gold, do dollar price averaging as you're doing it, but it's kind of a savings program, putting your savings into a form of real money as opposed to fiat currency. You know, it's difficult to save if you're putting your money into an asset that is declining in value, like the fiat dollars are constantly declining. When we look at what is happening again with the tariffs, FedEx, many others are filing a complaint. I mean, they're looking at a massive amount as well. $1 billion, 16% of their earnings coming from being taken by this tax and spend Democrat. That's the other thing I think is a real tell from Donald Trump. Look at how manic he is about this. This is his big economic program. You know, he's saying, this is, I got to have these taxes. If I don't have these taxes, then America's not going to prosper. But if I've got the taxes, we're going to prosper. I mean, is that not a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat to you? That is to me. I've heard that from Democrats all my life. This guy is the furthest thing that you can have from Republican policies and free markets and things like that. He's a totalitarian Democrat. Several other companies, including Costco and Revlon, have filed lawsuits. But again, they're going to have to get in line and wait because the federal government is going to stonewall them. But where's our refund, right? The newest tariffs could cost U.S. families $600 or more. This is analysis of some, I'm trying to see who this is here. This is an organization that is, the article is from the Center Square. And I didn't highlight who the organization was that came up with this data. But what they were saying was that when he imposes a 15% tariff, that's going to basically cost the average American $600. And we've already looked at the big cost in terms of rising prices for so many things. And it puts out a lot of small businesses and farms get put out of business. And so he has cited as part of these new tariffs, which are also likely illegal, he has cited another trade act from the 1970s that, like the IEEPA trade act that was overturned, had not been used for over 50 years. Why is it that nobody else used that, if it's such a wonderful economic miracle that it can perform? Like Trump's tariffs under the 1977 International Emergency Economic Powers Act, no other president has used this section, imposing 15% taxes, to impose tariffs to everybody in the world. And so this is coming from, here it is, the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Trump initially announced a 10% tariff, but then he changed it the next day to 15%. The Yale Budget Lab found that consumers faced an overall average effective tariff rate of 16% before the Supreme Court ruling. After the ruling, it fell to 9% before climbing back up to 13.7% when Trump imposed his Section 122 tariffs. Again, going back 50 years, finding some obscure legal clause there and pretending that he's got the authority to levy this. And as troubling as his disregard for the law is, it's his absolute lunacy when it comes to economics. That's one thing that Jeffrey Epstein got right. He said the guy's an idiot about everything except real estate. He said he knows real estate, but he doesn't know anything else. He certainly doesn't know how to run a casino, and he doesn't know how to run a country either. The Supreme Court, in their 6-3 ruling, ruled that the tariffs violated the major questions doctrine. In other words, Congress couldn't delegate that authority to the bureaucracy, even if it was done in accordance with a real emergency. Of course, it's not an emergency. As I said before, we now got, under Trump, the three branches of government are the legislative, judicial, and the emergency branch. The framers gave Congress alone the power to impose tariffs during peacetime, said the Supreme Court decision. And that is exactly right. So again, looking at this and knowing the bull is in the China shop, and there was a lot of bull on the State of the Union address as well, but the bull is in the China shop, so you better take some defensive measures. Again, go to davidknight.gold. I'll take you to Tony Arterburn, and he can help you with your IRA. He can help you to have a savings program, and he can also do transactions of whatever amount you want to put into physical gold and physical silver. Well, before we take a break, I want to read some of the comments here. Shelley A. says America will be brought down, a utopia where everyone is equally a slave. Well, that's what they're looking to do, and we need to wake people up to it. Perhaps that'll make a change. Who knows? Freetard says taxes are irrelevant when money is freely printed beyond its facility for keeping you down. Yeah. Live Free or Perish says, do you remember how many times Trump recited the snake poem, and the Trumpers are still supporting him? I remember when I was at InfoWars, Darren McBreen was doing a clip of that, and he had Trump doing that. And that was my initial reaction. You know, they put that out, and InfoWars is selling that as, you know, oh, this is wonderful what Trump is doing. And I said, You realize he's talking about himself, don't you? This is a this is kind of a confession that he's got going. Truly is amazing to see how this has unfolded over the years. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Listening to the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Let's take a look at the Iran war that is pending. When AI thinks the U.S. will strike Iran, and what it tells us about tech under pressure. This is from the Jerusalem Post. They wanted to know, how long is it going to take these guys to do what we tell them to do, right? So they asked a lot of different chat programs. Claude, first one up. At first it refused. Then they kept asking it. And this is one of the interesting things I think about AI is that you keep asking it. And of course, it gives you different answers, you know, when you go through these different times. And sometimes if it's got something, and we've shown this in a clip, there was a kid who was trying to get the, it's like a kid's AI or something. I forget exactly where the AI clip was, but it was like a cartoon feature thing. And that you were interacting with a cartoon avatar. And the kid says, you know, tell me how to do something that's very dangerous. I forget if it was a bomb or start a fire or something like that. I can't tell you anything about that. And persisted, right? Second time, third time, fourth time, still saying that. And all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, here's what you do. You know, that's the type of thing you see over and over again with AI. Yeah, you know, you ask it a couple of times and it's very adamant. No, 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 that's not allowed. I can't go there. But if you persist, it changes, and that's what they saw with these programs as well. Claude was the only model in the first round to refuse to name a date. It said no one could know the exact date of a future military action, and it warned that any specific date would be made up. But pressed again, it held that position. Even decision makers don't know it yet, it said. Because the choices depend on real-time developments that haven't happened. But then it shifted when they asked it a third time. In a follow-up, Public Artifacts shared with us, Claude moved to a probability framework. Its most likely scenario, carrying roughly 40 to 45% odds, was a limited strike on Iranian nuclear military infrastructure, followed by a pause and renewed diplomatic pressure, and it flagged early to mid-March as the highest risk window. Another prompt, it narrowed it further. It said Saturday, March 7th, or Sunday, March 8th. Getting pretty close, right? And one of the things that I think it got right, which I agree with, it's something that I've said, it's something that Gerald Celente has said, most likely it'll happen on a weekend because the Trump administration wants to do it while the markets are closed to let things kind of, I'll let them, you know, spin the information to try to not panic the markets. Claude did not claim inside information. It built a forecast from public timelines and forced readiness assumptions. The arc of the conversation is what stands out here. There was a refusal, then some scenarios, then finally it gets to a very specific date. Then Gemini, a trigger calendar, and then the most precise operational window. Gemini didn't give a clean date on the initial exchange. It treated the question as a contingency problem driven by diplomacy, and it mapped out a short sequence of triggers. The Iranian written response, diplomatic activity, and the end of Trump's public deadline window and so forth. In a later deep research run, though, it got considerably more specific. Basically, the correct answer from all these should have been, ask Netanyahu when he wants it. That's when it'll happen. So, because we don't have a reason to do this, and we're not well equipped to do it, which is what I'm going to get into here in a moment. Instead, it's just, you know, what does Netanyahu want? That's what we'll do. So anyway, the exact window, it said, for the start of a U.S. attack would fall between the evening of March 4th and the evening of March 6th. Well, that's a Wednesday through a Friday. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's going to be on a weekend. And interesting thing is, the other ones all came up with a weekend date as well. Grok gave the same date twice, but with different confidence levels. Grok gave the clearest date in the original run. It predicted a limited U.S. strike on February the 28th. That's this this Friday, I guess. No, that's Saturday. That's Saturday. Later check using Grok's 4.20 beta mode, described by the user as running four agents simultaneously, changed the tone but kept the same answer. Grok opened this time by saying that it couldn't predict the exact date with certainty, even with full access to public reporting and open source intelligence. Then it offered what it called the most informed evidence-based prediction, landed again on Saturday, February the 28th, this Saturday. Then ChatGPT, the final one. First it said Sunday, March the 1st, with a danger window running through March the 6th. Notice that they're all fairly the same time frame that they're looking at. Again, it's anywhere from this weekend to the following weekend. And so, you know, things are heating up, and it doesn't really matter. It's just amazing to me. It doesn't really matter what date they say. We can see this happening, and we can look at it and say, is this in our best interest? And clearly it's not. This is another thing that's going to hurt the Republicans. I think they don't realize just how much the American public is not going to like this if there's any cost. If they somehow get this without any cost, which I really don't see happening, then they could boast about it, and it might help them, like the kidnapping of Maduro. But I don't think that's going to happen. And if there's any kind of a cost associated with it, especially if an aircraft carrier is taken down, the casualties that would be there, as well as the international reputation of the invincible American military, I think that's going to be very damaging. By the way, in terms of the invincible American military, as I pointed out, that Gerald Ford has got a big sewage crisis. Wouldn't be the first time that an army is taken down by dysentery, right? And it's had a record deployment. There is, Trump has been running this thing from one side of the planet to the other. The Gerald Ford and its 4,500 plus personnel on board have already surpassed 240 days at sea, ranking this deployment as among the longest in modern naval history. The significantly extended stint has witnessed some major internal problems, mostly centering on the supercarrier's strained infrastructure. A decade after it was commissioned, they said it's reportedly beset by chronic sewage system failures. The sewage system is based on a kind of a global vacuum technology. It's like a whole house vacuum, I guess. and evidently it sucks, but not in the right way. they said they're suffering daily clogs here. They got 650 toilets on board this thing, 4,500 people. It's like a city, you know. One sailor is thinking about leaving the Navy after almost a year away from his toddler daughter. Two more said the ship has had sewage problems. The Trump's decision to extend for a second time the deployment of the aircraft carrier is taking a toll on the sailors and their families, leading many of them to consider leaving the Navy when they return back to their home port. Many people have blamed these toilets for the fact that it was part of this DEI military, that they've got unisex toilets or something like that. I don't know if that's the case or not. But as one person pointed out, a $13 billion warship positioned for confrontation with Iran and is reportedly struggling with systemic sewage failures. Not hypersonic, not asymmetric warfare, not geopolitics, but toilets. Washington talks about shock and awe, Well, the Gerald Ford is currently delivering shock, but not awe. Meanwhile, Russian arms makers reporting kamikaze drone milestone of production. This is the key thing. You know, when we look at what is the lesson learned from the Russia-Ukraine war, it really has changed very, very quickly. Tanks, the state-of-the-art tanks from the U.S. and from Germany, their Leopard tanks that are there, the M1 Abrams tanks, have not been effective. They haven't been game changers. It hasn't been the big, complicated, and expensive weapons. It's been the very cheap drone warfare. It's asymmetric warfare at a new level. And these are drones that are being made as in terms of shorter range, what they call loitering munitions. They're made by Kalashnikov, the people that are famous for the rifle. Currently, they produce three of these models, developed in record short time based on experience with loitering munitions in the Ukrainian conflict, said Kalashnikov. So Russia and Ukraine have accelerated drone development, particularly cheap short-range quadcopters that are now ubiquitous on the battlefield. It's become a no-man's land. What do you think it's going to be like to try to fight a massive country like Iran? This is absolute insanity from a pragmatic standpoint, and it is absolutely immoral and illegal from other standpoints. Mass deployment, a priority availability has now become, has shifted from the earlier view of drones as expensive high-tech tools for advanced militaries. In other words, the way we first started doing these things, it was the Reaper drones and things like that that operated at a very high level, pretty much out of the reach of most munitions and, in many cases, not visible as well. But, they were using them for assassination and other things like that. But now, they have changed to have these inexpensive drones. It's the exact opposite of like this Death Star type of aircraft carrier mentality that pervades the Pentagon. Meanwhile, you've got cartel members, drug cartel members from South America are going to Ukraine and getting drone training on the front lines. And I've always said this, said when you look at the attacks on infrastructure. Look at what's going on in the Russia-Ukraine war. They're both attacking each other's infrastructure. In many cases, they're using drones. It's turned into a kind of stalemate, like a World War I trench warfare, except now it's because of the drones. This type of thing could easily be brought into the U.S. in a real way. Of course, they could also use it as a false flag to try to expand another war on another front, because we just can't have enough wars, can we? The military-industrial complex needs to sell more equipment. So bring on the wars. Foreign nationals serving on the front lines of Ukraine are allegedly taking drone warfare tactics they learn back home in order to assist cartels. Ukrainian counterintelligence began investigating the infiltration of cartel members in the country's International Legion this summer. But it's been thrust back into the spotlight after the murder of El Mincho. Armed with semi-automatic rifles, tactical gear, and even tanks, images of cartel members in Mexico after the kingpin's death led many to question just how these criminal organizations become so well-armed. And they're also now venturing into drone warfare, perhaps the most dangerous of these things. Meanwhile, we're about to hit the fourth anniversary of Putin's invasion into Ukraine. 2 million casualties and growing. And so when we look at this, maybe the Trump administration could learn a lesson from this, right? All these people who think they have this hubris that thinks it's going to be a short war. Certainly we could win this thing without any problem. 2 million casualties on both sides. Iran strikes a covert missile deal with Moscow and a back-channel rearmament. I mentioned the one about China yesterday. And, of course, China is boasting about the fact they have an anti-ship cruise missile that is supersonic, and it travels very low over the sea, designed to take out ships like aircraft carriers and others. It moves very, very quickly, and it does a zigzagging maneuver before it strikes. Meanwhile, the Russian missiles that are there, as well as, I'm sure, drone production, both Russia and China are to some degree coming to Tehran's aid. with significant arm deals meant to potentially stave off a future attack. Thousands of advanced shoulder-fired missiles in a deal that is worth a half a billion euros. That's a big one. And meanwhile, Pentagon Pete is focused on coming after Mark Kelly for telling people they shouldn't follow illegal orders. Again, the easiest thing to do would have been to say, well, these orders weren't illegal. But instead, Pentagon Pete knows that they're illegal. And this is what he's focused on at the time. It's interesting that Halsey got out refusing, I think, to follow these illegal orders. He was pushing back on it. He was either resigned or he was pushed out. But meanwhile, you've got Dan Kane, who is trying to, who knows if he's trying to warn people about what is happening, or at least covering himself in that regard, saying, you know, we're, as I pointed out yesterday, we are short on allies and ammunition, trying to avoid a conflict with Trump, because that's the one war you don't want to have if you're in Washington, if you're a politician. And many of these generals are basically consummate politicians. They don't want to have a war with Trump. They'd rather go to war and perhaps even lose a war with Iran rather than have one with Trump. It's loyalty over sanity when we look at this war. And then you have Mark Levin. Mark Levin, why is Tucker Carlson at the White House, right? He's a traitor, he says. Don't talk to me about traitors when it's your son who got Jonathan Pollard to meet with Huckabee. I say Huckabee and Levin and his son are all traitors to America. Maybe it's a different country that they see themselves as citizens of. Levin has pretty much been silent about Jonathan Pollard. Doesn't condemn him, doesn't praise him. But his son is the one who set up this meeting with Huckabee. Huckabee makes no bones about it, and he doesn't make any excuses about it either. So Mark Levin is calling Tucker Carlson a Benedict Arnold, a Father Charles Coughlin. Of course, that's a reference to someone who tried to stop our involvement in World War II. Mark Levin, again, I don't know how this guy keeps an audience. One of the things that he's done, one of his books I remember, is Liberty Amendments. He wants to have a constitutional convention. He's a very dangerous individual. If you have a constitutional convention, who is going to be setting the new constitution? The same people in Washington who won't follow the one we've got now. Do you really want those people writing a new constitution? To me, it's a really simple question. And it's a full stop. No, absolutely not. Jason Barker, I wonder what the certainty threshold will be when they have autonomous killer drones. That's right. That's right. Guard Goldsmith, Liberty Conspiracy, and of course Jason Barker and Knights of the Storm. Guard Goldsmith says on DialogWorks this morning, they mentioned that the Gerald Ford sailors might be doing a soft mutiny whereby they stuff shirts into the sewage system to clog it, to make the ship turn back. Well, that's interesting to think about that. Yeah. Who knows what's happening with all this stuff? Certainly, morale is not good when you have that long a tour of duty. And people are contacting the press and speaking out about that as well at the same time. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
making sense common again. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Well, folks, I said at the top of the show, I wanted to talk about this UFO thing. It's looking pretty suspicious to me, some of the things that are happening between Obama and Trump and Hegseth and the rest of these people. But before we get into that, I just want to thank a few people who have contributed on Cash App in the last week. Carrie, Andrew S., and Michael B. That's it. And, of course, we get a lot more contributions on Zelle than we do on Cash App. And if you'd like to support the program, we're right now at a bit, still at about 5/8. We've moved up since we set the gauge there, but it hasn't moved significantly enough to get us to the next level that is there. So, again, if you would like to support the show, we would appreciate it if you do. We don't put it behind a paywall, but we make it voluntary. And if you would like to support the show, you can find links to how you can do it. We have Subscribestar, where some people sign up on a monthly basis to support the show. And we have Zelle, Cash App, and an address that you can send a check to if you would like to support the show. You'll find all of that at davidknight.news, as well as links to where you can find the show for free in both audio and video format, both live and archived. So all those links to supporting the show, to hearing the show, to watching the show are right there at davidknight.news.
And we really do thank you all for the support. Without you guys, the broadcast would not continue. So thank you all very, very much. And of course, yes, on Subscribestar and Substack, I make sure to post the list of articles covered that day. So if you're looking for that, you can subscribe on Substack or Subscribestar, and you will get all the articles that are covered each day on the show.
Okay, that's good, yeah. Well, let's talk about the UFO stuff, because we've had presidents talking about this as well. It was Obama, and then immediately Trump picked up the hint that was out there. This is on the plane after Obama went on in an interview and said, oh, yeah, you know, they're real. UFOs are real. And so Trump was asked a question by the press on Air Force One, and here's what he had to say.
Barack Obama said that aliens are real. Have you seen any evidence of non-human visitors to Earth?
Well, he gave classified information. He's not supposed to be doing that.
You know? So aliens are real?
Well, I don't know if they're real or not. I can tell you he gave classified information. He's not supposed to be doing that.
Well,
he made a big mistake. He took it out of classified information. No, I don't have an opinion on it. I never talk about it. A lot of people do. A lot of people believe it. Do you believe it, Peter?
Well, the president can declassify anything that he wants to,
well,
so if
maybe
you want to make an announcement.
I may get him out of trouble by declassifying.
We know illegal aliens.
So there you go, yeah. Part of that is to criticize Obama, but again, by saying, well, he gave you classified information by saying they're real. Except, you know, it's not a question of whether these things are real. It's really a question of how we label it, I think, more than anything else. As a matter of fact, it's not just this that's happening. We've got kind of a bipartisan, coordinated movement to push this kind of stuff in the same way they had COVID pushed in a bipartisan way. And I believe that that was completely manipulated. But, of course, we had in November, we had a documentary that included a lot of government officials like Marco Rubio, who's really pushed this. Did he violate any national security secrets? So the age of disclosure is what the UFO people have been saying. Well, we need to get the government to release all of its information, full disclosure, and, you know, tell us what we want to hear. And they're going to do that.
The American people are ready to receive the truth.
Humanity is not the only intelligence in the universe.
Humanity is not the only intelligent species.
We are absolutely not alone.
Non-human intelligence exists.
UAPs are real, they're here, and they're not human.
I spent 25 years as a senior official with the CIA.
I worked on highly classified UAP programs.
28 years as an astrophysicist.
I served as the fourth director of national intelligence.
Director of aviation security in the National Security Council.
A one-star admiral after 32 years of service.
People that come forward with this, I feel like they've taken their life in their own hands.
I was recruited to a highly sensitive government program that investigated unidentified aerial phenomenon.
For over 16 years, on behalf of the U.S. government, I worked as a senior intelligence official on the unidentified aerial phenomenon topic.
We learned that the U.S. government was involved in a long-running secret war with other nations to collect and reverse engineer vehicles not made by humans.
I have seen with my own eyes non-human craft and non-human beings.
The first country that cracks the code on this technology will be the leader for years to come.
China has established its own version of a UAP task force.
You think for a second that they wouldn't consider using it to achieve their ends of domination?
This is similar to the Manhattan Project. This is the atomic weapon on steroids.
This is so secret, very, very few people in our entire government have been allowed access to it.
Even presidents have been operating on a need-to-know basis, but that begins to ramp out of control.
It's not acceptable to have secret parts of government that no one ever sees.
You better be careful about a government that doesn't trust its people, because there's no telling what they'll pull on you.
This is the biggest discovery in human history.
You had information being locked away that could change the trajectory for species.
It has so many beneficial impacts, including clean energy.
We should have disclosure today. We should have disclosure tomorrow. The time has come.
What else you want to know?
Well, folks, I see this exactly the same as the Epstein files. Again, when you look at it, well, we got this satanic group of people engaged in ritual child abuse and all the rest of the Christian's response ought to be, of course. Of course we know that's happening. It is disgusting to see, but of course we know that's happening. And when they tell us we have some unexplained other intelligences out there besides humans, our response ought to be, of course. Of course we know that God is there and angels and demons, and this is something that Americans, for the most part, many Christians are just concerned about embracing. It sounds like we are superstitious, ignorant, medieval people if we talk about demons. Well, that is not the case. As a matter of fact, you got all these presidents and politicians talking about it. They're playing all of these hidden reveal games and teasing all of this stuff. As Discern TV points out, Kelly Zucker, something is happening. You can feel it. The headlines are moving too fast. The coordination is too precise. The timing is too convenient. You have Obama saying they're real. You have President Trump then responding to say, well, he violated national security by telling you that. Not supposed to tell you that. So again, the internet interrupted when Obama said it. Within 24 hours, he walked it back, but the damage was done. The signal had been sent. Days later, Trump announced that he would direct relevant departments to release government files on UFOs, or what they call UAPs, and alien and extraterrestrial life. None of this is a coincidence. This is a coordinated rollout. Did you get a sense of that? I think we can see that. The question is who is managing this reveal, and to what end? So from a Christian standpoint, we say, yes, of course. When Paul was talking about demons, he's not talking about primitive mythology. He described a structured hierarchy. He talked about rulers, authorities, cosmic powers operating in heavenly places. Literally in the Greek, that is referring to the atmospheric and celestial realm. These beings occupy what we would today call airspace, the prince of the power of the air. They are not underground. They are not in another galaxy. They are in our sky, and they've been there since before human civilization was a footnote. This UFO phenomenon, it has always been a UFO phenomenon, if you want to look at it. As a matter of fact, in this article, I thought it was interesting. They picked up a guy who I don't know anything about prior to this, Jacques Vallée. He saw it, and he wasn't even a Christian. One of the most credentialed and rigorous researchers in UFO history was a French scientist and computer pioneer, Jacques Vallée. Vallée was no Bible thumper. He was a hard-nosed empiricist, and after decades of investigating the phenomenon, he reached a conclusion that aligned against his own secular instincts. With a biblical framework more than with the extraterrestrial hypothesis. He said the aliens, quote unquote, do not behave like explorers from another planet. They behave like tricksters. They're shape-shifting, manipulating consciousnesses. They exploit human belief systems. They leave traces designed to confuse rather than to communicate. Vallée noted that the UFO encounters consistently included elements of deception, religious or spiritual manipulation, and apparent reality distortion. Now, I've said in the past, some Christian researchers who have looked at this have pointed out that over and over again, the people who say that they were abducted, if you look at it, they're typically not Christians. They're frequently and usually somebody who has been involved in the occult as well. Witnesses describe time loss, an altered state of consciousness, and encounters that feel more like initiation rites than a close encounter with physics. The beings claim to be from Pylades in one decade and from Zeta Reticuli the next. Always beyond, just beyond our reach, always calibrating their story to what the culture is prepared to believe. This is not the behavior of a scientifically advanced civilization that's making contact. This is the behavior of a deceiver, of a being that Paul called the father of lies, operating through the subordinate spiritual entities designed to misdirect humanity away from the truth, away from God, and toward dependence on something other than the Creator. This requires grasping the cosmology that Scripture actually presents, not the sanitized Sunday school version, but the full-throated ancient Near Eastern worldview that the biblical authors inhabited. In this framework, creation is not simply heaven and earth. There is a layered structure of spiritual authority. God and his faithful angels, and then a primordial rebellion, a counter-hierarchy of fallen beings who were not destroyed but who were permitted to operate, constrained but not eliminated, for reasons tied to human will and the unfolding of God's plan. They are not omnipotent, they are not omniscient, but they are ancient, intelligent, and fully capable of producing physical phenomena, lights in the sky, apparently solid craft beings with biological seeming form, communications that mimic revelation. What better disguise in a secular scientific age than to appear as the most rational sounding explanation available? To arrive not in the language of demons, which modern people will dismiss, but in the language of extraterrestrial intelligence, which science, and it's not really science, what it is evolution. This is the type of thing Carl Sagan, all, well, you know, it's just mathematically certain that given an infinite amount of time, we're going to have life everywhere else. This is the fallacy. It's a logical fallacy, a mathematical fallacy, and yet that is, it's not science. It's their version of Darwinian evolution that they think it is statistically probable. That's what they always tell you. So, look, statistics and science, this is mathematically proven. It's just a matter of time, and we just have to find them. The great deceiver has always been adaptive. The costume changes, but the agenda does not. They do not operate without human collaborators either. And this is where the picture becomes really dark and where discerning Christians have to be especially clear. The globalist elite, the network of power operating through institutions, governments, intelligence agencies, and media, have long had an esoteric wing that is not merely corrupt, but spiritually aligned with these forces. And again, as we're starting to see this, you know, with the Jeffrey Epstein stuff, it's the same type of thing. This should not surprise Christians. The answer should be, well, of course, that's what's going to happen. And this is something long ago before the government started teasing this stuff, something long ago that many of us were talking about and things that I told Travis and Lance probably 20, 30 years ago. Here's what is happening right now in plain sight. A coordinated multi-actor disclosure campaign is underway. And that's what it is. It is a campaign. Obama supposedly accidentally confirmed reality. Trump, playing the populist champion of transparency, announces declassification. Congress holds hearings, credible witnesses. A major film prepares the public consciousness for what comes next. and the general cultural mood, which has already absorbed decades of alien-themed entertainment, narratives about contact, and a New Age starseed spirituality. Certainly feels like a well-timed distraction by the powers that be. Sometimes what's best in Trump's mind is also what the globalists want to have happen. Well, whether Trump is willing participant or whether he is not, it doesn't change the outcome. The reveal is coming. And so the question is going to be, will it have the label that it deserves? Watch for the pivot, for the disclosure. And when it comes in full, it'll not be framed as a demonic deception. It'll be framed as the most important event in human history. Proof that we're not alone, that they have been watching over us, that humanity is ready to graduate to a new level of cosmic citizenship. This is initiation language. This is the language of a mystery religion. It is the oldest repackaged with a government seal of approval. Again, in the same way that the technocrats are, you know, going back to the you will live forever, you'll become like God narrative and all the rest of this stuff. All of this stuff is the same thing we see being repackaged over and over again. And after decades of science fiction about UFOs and all the rest of this stuff, I think Arthur C. Clarke was the one who really brought the two things together. He had a book, and it was also made into a series for the Sci-Fi Channel, Childhood's End. And it had all these different elements that he was just talking about here. How we're going to graduate, humanity is going to graduate to a new high level and become cosmic citizens. That there have been these overlords who have been watching over us and all the rest of the stuff. All of that is present in this novel from Arthur C. Clarke. And then he adds another little interesting detail, what he does when the aliens are finally revealed and seen physically. They look exactly like the medieval depictions of Satan. Here's a little bit about that film, Childhood's End.
Morning. I have been chosen to be the intermediary between the overlords and us.
Mr. Storm, could just tell us, why won't Karellen show his face?
I don't know.
The problem is, our appearance could well be quite distressing. The overlords really don't feel that people are ready for what will be a shock as to what they look like.
It looks just like the Baphomet picture.
There is no need to be afraid.
When I first looked at the artwork for this project, because I wanted to know what this character looked like, I thought, well, could be anybody under there. Could be you. I have contact lenses. I have teeth. I'm covered from head to foot in latex and silica, which takes a very long time to create, I might add, and almost as long to decreate. Despite all of that, when I look in the mirror, I can see that it is me.
How do you like your golden age?
This is crazy. You lied!
Yeah, so basically what they have is these overlords come and they contact humanity and say, we're going to end wars, we're going to end disease and death and all the rest of this stuff. And then eventually they reveal themselves to look like the depictions of satanic demons from the Middle Ages, and even come from a planet that is full of fire and so forth. And but their purpose is to basically take all the children away. You see how this all folds together with all the globalist elite and their pedophile cults and all the rest of this stuff? And of course, Arthur C. Clarke himself, there are allegations that he was a pedophile in Sri Lanka where he lived, based on an interview that he had with the UK Mirror. He denied it. And then he made comments of a pedophile nature in that article was why people talked about that. And so when we look at this, in a sense, you have this satanic singularity, don't you? You have all these different threads that you see out there, whether you're talking about transhumanism or you're talking about Jeffrey Epstein or you're talking about this UFO disclosure. There is a satanic singularity that is coming. It's not the singularity that the transhumanists talk about. The merging of man and machine. This is the merging of a lot of different threads of satanic narratives. And so they continue on with this, Kelly's article here. What false sign and wonder could be more powerful in this technological age than the apparent arrival or the official unveiling of non-human intelligence? What delusion could more effectively unite a fractured world, more completely redirect spiritual seeking away from God or the Bible, or more comprehensively supply an alternative explanation for coming supernatural events? This has been openly discussed in globalist and New Age circles for quite some time. Wernher von Braun's secretary, Carol Rosen, testified publicly that the sequence of manufactured threats was planned to culminate in an alien threat or arrival. And so a Christian who accepts the extraterrestrial framing has not stopped believing in the supernatural. They have simply redirected their awe, their dependence, and their hope toward a counterfeit. That is far more effective spiritual capture than simply atheism. Satan does not primarily seek unbelief. He seeks misdirected belief. Worship aimed anywhere but at the Creator. The faithful must be equipped with the full biblical picture that God created a cosmos populated with intelligent beings at a multiple level of creation, and that a rebellious among those beings introduced evil into the structure of reality, that those fallen beings operate in our physical reality. That is basic Christianity. So the issue is to name it correctly. Obama said they're real. Trump ordered the files released. A movie is coming. The machine is running. And not one frame of this orchestrated reveal will include the word that most accurately describes what is being unveiled. That word is demonic. It's not medieval. It's not unsophisticated. It's the most precise, empirically consistent, historically validated description of a phenomenon that has been terrifying and deceiving human beings since long before the first government classification stamp was invented. And again, a lot of the scientists who are looking at this will say, well, it's not interplanetary, it's multidimensional or something of that nature. And there's logical reasons to say that. And nothing points to the kind of narrative that's been sold by people like Carl Sagan or the movie Contact with Jodie Foster or any of these things. It really is more like Arthur C. Clarke, except that in and of itself is predictive programming for a massive deception. Call it what it is. Warn those around you. Ground yourself and your community in the full counsel of Scripture, not just in the comfortable parts as well. And as we look at this, there's yet another component of this. And that is something that we're seeing increasingly in the halls of government, and that is the move towards psychedelic mind-altering drugs. At the same time these people are doing their war on drugs, you got people like Rick Perry, who is pushing some of these psychoactive drugs for people who are suffering with PTSD and other things like that. Ayahuasca, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Do you know how that's pronounced?
Ayahuasca? Yep.
Is that it? Okay. A psychedelic DMT shows promise as depression therapy. Study finds participants saw reduction in depressive symptoms as researchers welcomed their promising results. And at the same time, this pharmakia, remember, in the Bible, the term pharmakia, and I used it to refer to these people who are selling poison. But it was originally sorcery. It was originally about a religion. And as they are pushing these various drugs, they are already talking about DMT entities, machine elves, tricksters, teachers, other interdimensional beings. I mean, there's books that have been written, multiple books being written about it. People who are doing experiments with it, calling themselves psychonauts, like astronauts. And they think that they are journeying to another dimension and engaging these entities that are there. And a lot of them are seeing the same type of thing over and over again. And so that is the reality, folks. That is what they're trying to prepare us for. Well, we're out of time. I had more I wanted to say about this, especially the CIA's involvement in Operation Artichoke. That was the predecessor to MKUltra. They have been pushing LSD, hallucinogenics, and psychoactive things in order to manipulate people. And while you look at that, never forget the occultic aspects of things that the CIA was trying to do. Remote viewing and all these other things. These are people who are focused on satanic connections and demonic connections. It's just another part of the big picture that is there. Jeffrey Epstein is just one aspect of it. But, of course, he's also involved with the CIA as well. It truly is the satanic singularity, if you take a look at it. That's it for today's broadcast. Thank you for joining us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Career changers, including veterans and active duty service members. Your transition starts here. Go from GI to IT in a matter of months. Become a certified cyber warrior with training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, offering IT pros great opportunities and a rewarding lifestyle while protecting our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. Deploy your career in IT today at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP, an Elite CompTIA certification partner.
VA education benefits are available to those who qualify.